on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from UBC Vancouver campus, located on the unceded and unsurrendered lands of the Musqueam peoples. The NYP is a work-learn program that is held at the Museum of Anthropology here on the UBC campus every summer. This year is the program's 43rd year, making it ATMOA's longest-running public program. This year's theme is place and what place means to us. All of these stories are deeply personal, and we are excited to welcome you on this journey with us.
A brief content warning. The following stories mention residential schools, intergenerational trauma, racism, alcoholism, and self-harm that some may find triggering. Please take care of yourself.
Hello, everyone. My name is Haley. I'm from Musqueam, and I'm a member of the 2022 Native Youth Program at the Museum of Anthropology. I'm an alien. At least, that's what it feels like being an Indigenous person in the city. I have lived in the same country, same city, same neighborhood, and the same house for my entire life. Somehow, I still feel out of place. I can never seem to get myself to a point in my life where I feel like I belong. At least not permanently. I'm too Indian for the city, and I'm too city for most reservations. My life consists of switching between two alternate personalities to fit into my lifestyle. I'm free to be who I want to be when I'm with my family and friends on the reserve. I have my own style, which often consists of sweatpants. I don't feel the need to wear makeup, and even my speech is different. Whereas when I'm in school or in public, my whole demeanor has to change. I never use slang, I wear put-together outfits, and I wear makeup, but not too much, because too much isn't ideal for the public. I do this because I'm afraid of falling into any stereotypes people may have of First Nations people, and I want to prove them wrong. I want to live a happy and successful life. And I can't complain too much about this, but I can't help but feel slightly jealous of people that live on more isolated reserves. Don't get me wrong, I realize that I'm lucky to live on the Musqueam Reserve, but people on more isolated reserves just seem more connected to our culture than I could ever be. They can do traditional activities anytime they want because they have the resources outside their back door. Whereas for me, it's slightly harder because I don't have the same resources in the city. Now I know it seems slightly absurd that I want to know my place in this world at the age of 17, but I had at least a little hope that after 6,300 days of breathing, I'd find somewhere to call home. But I do have these short moments where I feel as though I have found my ideal place. Those are my favorite moments. The first time I had one of these moments was at the age of 5, when I first learned how to make bannock with my dad. I walk into the kitchen, smell the stench of boiling oil, and I see my dad. I look up at him, and I feel as though my neck stands at a 45-degree angle. And I ask him, "What are you doing, Dad?" He looks down at me and tells me that he's making bannock. And I smile so hard that my cheeks hurt and my teeth grit against one another. And like every time he makes bannock, I ask him, "Can I help?" And it's different this time. Instead of telling me to go back into the living room and watch TV like he usually does, he lifts me up and puts me on the counter and says, "Yep, you're gonna help me." I didn't think it was possible, but I swear, my smile grew so much that you could see the gaps where my baby teeth once sat. I sit in front of a big, bright blue bowl, and I begin to follow my dad's instructions. For every cup of flour, there's 1 tablespoon of baking powder. I pour in the first cup. And that first cup creates a cloud over the bowl and into my face. And I distinctly remember my dad laughing at me and wiping my face with a cloth. After that little incident, I continued on with bannock making, constantly repeating in my head, "For every cup of flour, 1 tablespoon of baking powder." I add in the rest of the ingredients and mix, but not too much. You want your bannock to be light and fluffy. The dough finally forms, and at that point, my dad boots me out to the living room. He won't let me be around the hot oil. But as I sit on the couch, I can smell the bannock being cooked, and I was so excited that I didn't care about the TV screen in front of me. My dad then brings a bowl into the living room to where my mom and I are sitting. In the bowl sits the golden bannock, peanut butter, butter, and jam. My first bannock. I was so proud, and so were my parents. It was perfect. It turns out that within that short cooking lesson, I had been using the guidance of my family before me. The ingredients, the tips, and the rules, it had all been passed down from generation to generation. I didn't know it at the time, but that day I discovered my ideal place. As I grew older, I began to do more traditional activities that made me feel like I belonged. I went fishing with my parents, where I was able to feel at peace on the water. I went hunting and got my first deer. Once we got home, I gave the meat to the elders in my community. I went to the big house. And more recently, I've started to do more traditional artwork. Through my traditional activities, I became more connected to my culture. And even though I don't always feel like I belong on this colonized land, I found my moments where I feel comfortable and safe.
Hello, my name is Drea Nishyuk. I am 16 years old and I use she, her pronouns. I am Nishka from the village of Gitlagdamiks on my mom's side, Haisla from Kitimat on my dad's side, and Gitsala from Kitkatla on my biological dad's side. And this is my first year being part of the 2022 Native Youth Program at MOA. Today I'm going to be talking about how the environments I have been in have affected my mental health and well-being. I'm going to tell you my story of how I broke out of my cage. As a child, I never really knew what I was. I never knew where I belonged. I always heard my friends' parents talk about these so-called Indians, saying that they're a waste of space and all they do is have way too many kids that they don't take care of because they're always drunk and passed out on the streets. I always heard these things and never once would I have ever thought I was an Indian. When I was around the age of 6 or 7, I went to a school where the students weren't really the best, and it didn't help that most of them were indigenous. Most of my friends at that school were indigenous and all I had to look up to. Most of them grew up in an environment that wasn't really the best. They had role models who weren't living their best lives. So because of the environment I was in, I always thought I was going to grow up to be an alcoholic or a druggie. So as a little 7-year-old girl, I was absolutely terrified. I was halfway through the second grade when me and my family decided to make the big decision to move to Burnaby, which obviously meant I had to start at a new school. I did really good at this school. I had some good friends, the teachers were nice, and I was slowly but surely learning about my indigenous culture. It wasn't until my last year at this school when I noticed I felt I had to hide my identity. I was slowly starting to learn and understand my culture, but I was still scared I was going to end up drunk and asleep on the streets when I grew up. At every elementary school, I always felt the need to hide my identity. Whenever it came to talking about our culture, I would always lie and say that I didn't know, but I would ask my mom later. Long story short, I never did. Right after graduating from elementary school, I was terrified. I know I said this for every school, but I was actually really scared. My high school was huge. Not only that, but the older students were all judgmental and intimidating. Most of them didn't care about culture or their education. I had some friends, and I was even invited to go to the indigenous room to meet more students that were like me. I went, and I ended up making some friends, and the indigenous room was our safe haven. For the first couple of weeks at Burnaby Central, I only had my indigenous friends. But eventually I made friends with a guy in my grade. We were really good friends for the entire year. He hung out with me and my friends whenever we could. But eventually he wanted me and my other friend to be the manager of our grade 8 boys rugby team. We would always hang out with the team and we had to go to their every practice and their every game, which was so fun. We ended up going to the finals and winning. I remember we were sitting outside on the stairs, It was quiet. Then all of a sudden, I hear my so-called friend say, "I don't know why Indigenous people go to school. They're just going to end up drinking their lives away." All I remember was me standing up pissed and walking away without a word. "What did I say?" was all I heard when I was walking away. I heard my friend yell, "We're Indigenous, you idiot." From then on, we completely blocked him out. I'm not going to lie, I did have some feelings for him, but once I heard that sentence leave his lips, those feelings went away. From then on, I could not get that sentence out of my head. That sentence gave me flashbacks to when I was in my old elementary school, when I thought I was going to end up a disappointment. I got so fed up to the point where I started to skip school. First one class a week, then that changed to three times a week. Then it got to the point where I was going to school, but I wouldn't go to any classes. I have no idea how I didn't get caught for the longest time, but eventually I got caught and ran around the school and was chased by my principal. Then there was a big meeting about me. They ended up calling my mom. My mom was obviously pissed. After I got a talk from my grandparents, aunties, and uncles, it was decided it was best for me to move schools. At my new high school, St. Regis Secondary, I was scared due to the fact that it was a private school, but also because it was way smaller. This year we only had 25 students, and I was one of the six kids that were on scholarship. I was also scared of being looked down upon, because all the other students had parents who were rich, and my mom and dad were working so hard to keep me and my siblings happy with whatever they could give us. My parents always put us first no matter what. They always wanted me to be happy. My first semester at St. Regis was quiet. The rich kids kept to themselves, and the kids who were on scholarship kept to ourselves. It wasn't until our skating field trip when we all started to get closer. Then all of a sudden we weren't two separate groups. We were all friends and got along really well. And not only that, but my grades were way better. At Central, I was just barely passing. But at St. Regis, I was getting A's and B's. Plus, I didn't have to hide my culture. In fact, I am now the First Nations ambassador. I now no longer skip out on school. Every once in a while, I'm a bit late, but that's it. At St. Regis, I don't have to hide or pretend to be someone I'm not. I'm free to be who I am and have my own opinion and say what I want to say. Public schools have well over 1,400 students. They don't have time to just worry about one student. I mean, don't get me wrong, public schools are great and all, but it wasn't the best option for me. At private school, we have under 30 students. They have time to get to know each and every student. They can help us with what we need when we need it, and they care about our education and well-being. And I was lucky enough to get this opportunity to go to a private school for free. So if you were going to ask me where my place in the world is and what place means to me, it's where I don't have to be scared of what everyone's going to think of me. It's where I can be who I want to be. Where I don't have to hide my culture. It's where I am cared for and where I feel I most belong.
Hello, my name is Amai Campbell. I use she, her pronouns, and I am 15. I am a part of the 2022 Native Youth Program, and I am a returning alumni. I am Coast Salish from Musqueam on my mom's side and Zimbabwean African on my father's. I'm going into the 10th grade at Little Flower Academy. Today, I will be talking about microaggressions, how my appearance affects me, and experiences I faced as an Afro-Indigenous person. Growing up, I was the only black kid in my school and friend groups. Living in Vancouver, the black community here is very small. It's so small, when I'm in public and see other black people, I get excited, which is honestly just so sad. I shouldn't be getting this excited to see other black people. Because of this, I wasn't very connected with my black culture, and I was very insecure when I was younger when it came to my blackness. Being mixed with an absent black father was quite difficult, because I didn't exactly have a black role model to teach me how to love my hair and my skin, how to deal with racism, and just to teach me about my culture. My father was always around. He was there physically, but he wasn't emotionally. I love my father so much. I'd rather have him than no father, but it was and still is a struggle for me. Of course I had my mom, who's Indigenous. She tried her best to teach me these things, but that only goes so far, considering we don't receive racism in the same way. My hair and skin tone was a big issue for me, especially in a predominantly white school. I felt like the black sheep. I mean, I was, quite literally. Which leads into what I want to talk about first, microaggressions. For those who don't know, a microaggression is a statement, action, or incident regarded as an instance of indirect, subtle, or unintentional discrimination against people of a marginalized group, such as a racial or ethnic minority. Black, Indigenous, and other people of color are always getting microaggressions. For example, "Can I touch your hair? Do you live in a teepee? Natives get things for free." And it goes on from there. In elementary school, specifically the sixth grade, I had a little feud with girls in my friend group. And when the teacher got involved, I felt that I was being targeted. Like I said before, I was the only black girl, and the teacher was telling my mom that I was the leader of this bullying group and that I was really mean and aggressive, which I wasn't. I mean, I was 11. I don't know how bad an 11-year-old girl could really be. There is this stereotype about black women that we are loud, rude, ghetto, and aggressive. This stereotype affects me in so many ways, even just with the way I talk. When talking to my white friends, it is very different from the way I talk to my family and black friends. I make sure not to use as much slang. I keep my voice more toned down because I don't ever want to fit into these stereotypes. In the seventh grade, when me and all my classmates were getting accepted into high schools, a girl in my class didn't get accepted into the school I'm currently attending, which is Little Flower Academy. This really upset her, so much to the point that she was telling other people in my class that I didn't deserve to go there, I wasn't smart, and that the only reason they accepted me was because I was Indigenous. This really messed with my confidence, and I started to believe all the things she was saying to me. This was said almost 3 years ago, and it still messes with me. Next, I want to talk about my appearance and how it affects me. Being a black woman living in a predominantly white area, my appearance has always been an insecurity for me. When I was younger, I would always compare myself to my white friends. I wanted to be a blonde-haired, blue-eyed white girl. Like I said before, I didn't grow up around black culture or people, other than my family, which was basically just my dad and my sister. My skin color and hair was my biggest insecurity. I'd always ask my mom to straighten my hair, put it in a bun or ponytail. I never wanted to let down my natural hair because of what people would say. "Why is your hair so frizzy? Have you ever tried brushing your hair? You look better with straight hair." And one of the most annoying ones, which you should never ask a black woman, is, "Can I touch your hair?" The worst part about this question is that people won't even ask to touch my hair. They just do it. It makes me feel like a dog. I still continuously get this question. In the eighth grade, I started to embrace my hair. I had gotten a haircut that was a lot shorter than I was usually comfortable with. When I showed my friends, two of them started laughing and calling me mophead. One of the girls said, and I quote, "You know what job Amai could do? She could be a mop." After she said this, the other girl started laughing and repeating, "Mophead, mophead." You'd think that 14-year-old girls in 2021 would know better. In the sixth grade, one of my friends said my skin color looked like poo. I remember going home crying that day and searching up on YouTube how to get lighter skin. I would try my best not to go in the sun to make sure I didn't get a tan, and I'd try out all of these homemade coffee scrub and lemon mixtures to look more pale. Thankfully, it didn't work. Though these situations are messed up and should have never happened, in a way, I'm glad they did, because they helped shape the person I am today. I am proud of my skin, my hair, and my culture. I am a confident, strong, resilient Afro-Indigenous woman who loves herself and doesn't let white European standards define her beauty. For me, place is self-love, self-acceptance, and not letting people define your worth.
Hey guys, my name's Emma. I'm Cree and Dene, and I'm a new member of the 2022 Native Youth Program. I'm 15, turning 16, and today I'm going to be talking about the stress and different stages of life, as well as the friendships and stereotypes that come with it, from being a kid to becoming a teenager, and the effect it has on us and our mental state. I feel like when you're a young kid, everything is carefree. It's almost like you don't have a care in the world. The biggest worry on my mind at the time is I was going to get a fruit roll-up in my next lunch, or if my favorite show was going to come on next. I remember going to the park with my friends and playing Manhunt. That game was the best. There was this one friend I had in kindergarten, and her name was Chloe. I remember I was really jealous of her at the beginning because she got a new princess dress. Even so, I got over it within a few days, and me and her talked about princesses all day long. We had this thing where we would bring 3 toys each and trade them. Sometimes we would trade back the stuff we originally traded for. When I was in kindergarten, the teacher would choose a student to help out. They were called Student of the Week. I loved it when I got chosen, because after, we could get a prize from the class prize bin. I stayed in that school for a bit, then I transferred for grade 2. I made a lot of friends at this school. We became pretty close. For me, as an extrovert, I loved making friends. It was like a place I could go and talk and share my interests. In my preteen years, that's when the stress and the anger came a lot more. In grade 6, there were so many fights. I remember me and my friends would have fights all the time, every day. But we would usually make up the next day or the following week. I remember there was this one time when I was in the middle of 2 friend groups. As an extrovert, naturally, I was trying to become friends with everyone. But that becomes hard when some of your friends just don't like each other. And then they would get mad at me for hanging out with other groups of friends. When you're at this stage in your life, for most, like me, you're just starting puberty. And you're learning a whole bunch of new things about you and your body, which can be very, very scary at times. When you're a teenager, everything comes so fast. You're expected to act and look a certain way, depending on the people around you. There are many things that aren't taught to you that you have to figure out on your own. Different people will have very different expectations from you. You're expected to act mature when studying and when you're in class, but also to act silly doing class games or skits. When you're with little kids, you have to engage with them and change your tone as well as line of speech, like what you do and say. It's almost like you're expected to have multiple personalities. You have to change the way you talk with different friend groups. If you're talking to older teens, you have to act more mature or you're quote-unquote childish. But when you're with younger teens, you have to act and match their energy, or you're labeled as boring. When you're a teen, it's always so hard. You're too young to hang out with adults, and too old to hang out with the kids. You expect not to cry when you're yelled at, to try and get along with everyone, parents and teachers. One of the best things and ways for me is just to talk about it all with my friends. To talk about all the stress that's happening in my life, and they talk about theirs as well. And then we usually just laugh it off at the end. I always find having my friends around is really important. It's a good distraction from things I really do not need to be thinking about. Another thing about being a teenager is it's one of the biggest turning points in your whole life. It can make or break your whole future, depending on who you hang out with. Another thing about friends is they can be a big influence on you. So all I'm basically saying is make sure you hang out with people who can lift you up and not bring you down. For me, friends are everything. If I'm not texting or talking to someone, it drives me crazy. And when someone is busy and can't talk or can't hang out, my mind automatically goes to, oh no, did I do something wrong? Or say something wrong? And I get scared that they might be mad at me. And I know some of you are probably thinking, oh, that's weird. Friends, to me, are not only my sense of place, though. But friends and me are like my family, and your family is kind of like your friends. You'll have like a certain vibe and way you talk with each other. You get in fights every so often over really dumb things, but in the end, you always make up. Life has its ups and downs, no matter what happens and what path you choose to take. Surround yourself with friends, and yes, family as well, is really good for you. Because you'll know that there's people there for you. Sometimes you may have to part ways, That's because you both have different interests in life. And sometimes they'll stick to your side till the very end. There's no real way of telling which is bad or which is good, but as long as whichever option you choose helps you. You can be your own person. You don't have to fit in with all the stereotypes and trends. Let your friends support you and let you grow, and in return, support them. To me, place is friends. I feel like I'm most at home when I'm with them. It's like I have a sense of belonging, a place where I can go and always turn to. Again, I'm Emma, and thank you for listening.
Hi, everyone. My name is Jesse. I am 17 years old, and my nations are Gitsang, Cree, and Gwich'in. And I'm also a member of the NYP at MOA this year. Today I'm going to be talking about a place, a special place. That place is the gym. The gym is no ordinary place. It's like a second home to me. Like seeing a lot of your buddies working out feels like seeing your family. A central part of being at the gym is commitment. Commitment to routine. The idea of eating healthy foods and counting macros. For me, if you don't know what macros are, it is the amount of protein intake, calorie count, carbs, fats that you'll eat in a day. I personally have around 2,800 calories and close to 250 grams of protein to reach my daily amount to have if I want to reach my goal of losing around 20 kilos. But I haven't got down to the amount of fats / carbs to have a healthy diet. But I'm always learning and growing on that subject. I want to talk about my brother. My brother is currently enrolled in a kinesiology program. One area he has taught me in is about rotation of exercises. I'm his patient zero. We talk daily about our progress in weightlifting and how we can stay focused. He has shaped the person who I am to be today. It all started when I looked myself in the mirror and decided I had to change for the better. One day I asked my bro, how do I get started? You know? And then after week one, I was feeling the effects of soreness and hate it. But as time went on, I adapted to it and it felt good. Switch back to my bro. He's probably my biggest help by getting my split down. Oh, the split. Probably my favorite thing. A split is rotation of exercises. Say on Monday, I target chest and back. Then on Tuesday, I target arms. Of course, you know what arms are. Mixture of your bicep, tricep, and also work my delts on that day to get the best pump. Oh, and I forgot about legs. Sorry, I can talk about this all day. But I know I'm beating around the bush and not getting to why I actually started going to the gym. I started to see physical changes after around 10 weeks. It felt like the biggest ego boost ever. When I started losing weight and finally feeling good about myself, I also realized something. I don't think you should aspire to be somebody else, like an influencer on social media or a buff guy at the gym. And besides, it's unhealthy motivation and you might always end up feeling insecure. Instead, you should focus on yourself and try and become the best version of yourself. And also, I want to shed light on the stereotypes about people who lift in the gym regularly. You probably think of a dumb jarhead, but in my experience, there are a lot of really smart people. For instance, my mentor Lex, who's another big native dude like me. He showed me how to prepare, stretch before workout to never get injured. How to fix my form. Form is very important. He showed me the most effective and intense routines. I see him as a bigger version of myself because he is standing in at 6'9", 290 pounds, and I am at 6'6", 275. And that was my mentor, Lex. Now, I want to talk about motivation. I want to talk about how I felt weak, I felt too big. When I used to look at myself in pictures, I knew I wanted change. So I looked up people like Ronnie Coleman and Jay Cutler, who are pro bodybuilders. Jay Cutler actually won 4 Mr. Olympias back in 06, 07, 09, and 2010. He's considered a top bodybuilder of his time. And Ronnie Coleman, in my opinion, is the best bodybuilder of all time. He has won over 8 Mr. Olympias in the past 8 years, back in 1998 to 05. 2 of the greatest to ever do it. And now I want to fast forward in my journey. I can really see a big change in myself, my energy balance, my confidence levels, and seeing not just me, but also my buddies putting in the work and us working towards our goals to build strength and positive self-esteem. And that was the end for me. And what place means to me is somewhere where I feel comfortable, where I'm challenged, and where I can feel a sense of community. Thank you, everyone.
Hi, my English name is Cheyenne. My traditional name is Haekjum, which translates to strong one in the Celtic language. My other traditional name is Haizel's Igsdukuya, which translates to Haizel's Eagle in the Haizla language. I am Celtic Haizla and Haida from Old Masset in Heidelberg, Alaska. I'm 16 and I'm part of this year's Native Youth Program. There's nothing I'm more grateful for than to be Indigenous. When I'm meeting new people, the first thing I want to tell them is that I'm Indigenous. I didn't really get into depth of my Indigenous roots until I was around 10 years old, and before that, I felt like there was something missing in my life. Not only did I not grow up like my cousins or the other kids on my res, but I grew up in a suburban part of Surrey, and I always felt distanced from my people and culture. Being in the suburbs of Surrey for the first 11 years of my life was really hard for me. I was one of the very few Indigenous kids at my school. Surrey was never home to me. I never felt like I had a community there. It was just a place I lived in the early years of my childhood.
I imagine my parents must have felt disconnected, too, living in Surrey. I didn't grow up clueless about my culture. My mom always made sure that I knew about her and my dad's culture. I was put in an Indigenous-focused preschool. My parents would take me to things like West Coast Night and East Van, which were Indigenous cultural nights, and I'll always be grateful for that. I've been trying to learn my culture. I started learning the Celtic and Haizel languages at age 11. I've attended Celtic dance classes. I've helped and participated in potlatches. I've done everything I can to be cultural, and yet I still feel like people see me as whitewashed or colonized. I'm 3/4 Indigenous and 1/4 white, but I don't look like your typical Indigenous person. I have very pale skin and bright green eyes. I do have very long brown hair, though. When I tell people I'm Indigenous, they say, "You don't look Native, you look white," or, "I would have never guessed that you were Native." And to me, that's the most hurtful comment, especially if it's coming from your own people. I wasn't close to some of my dad's side of the family when I was really young. I was really close to my mom's side of the family. My mom is from the Haizla Nation in Kitimat. We went to Kitimat a lot. Most of the time, we were going for funerals, and sometimes we would just go to visit. I loved going to Kitimat and seeing all my family and being around my own people. Most of my dad's side of the family didn't live in Vancouver, so I mainly just had my grandma, a couple aunties and uncles, and we never really went to Bella Bella, so it wasn't until I got older that I met my dad's other family. Once in a while, I'd see them in my childhood, but I didn't know them as well as I knew my other family members. We went to Kitimat a lot due to deaths in our family. My mom has a pretty big family, since my great-grandparents had 14 children, and it's not the best way to gather family, but that was the main reason why we went to Kitimat. Shortly after I turned 10, I became a woman, and in most West Coast Indigenous cultures, it is a very sacred time in a woman's life, especially in the Haudenosaunee culture. The summer after I turned 10, my family and I already had planned a trip to Bella Bella for my late Auntie Lorraine's tombstone feast, hosted by my Wilson family. When becoming a woman in the Haudenosaunee culture, there are strict protocols put in place, including having a ceremony at the next feast. In the first 4 days, the woman must stay in a dark room, avoiding hot foods and drinks, and avoiding sharp objects. These traditions are very important, and they hold teachings that have been passed down since time immemorial. We did my coming-of-age ceremony at my late Auntie Lorraine's tombstone feast. That summer was only my third time going to Bella Bella, and the summer I connected to more of my Indigenous roots. After the feast, I went to a cultural camp in Bella Bella that focuses on land-based learning. The camp is located on an unoccupied island, which is a 2-hour boat ride from Bella Bella. I've attended many camps since then, and I'll always be grateful for it teaching me what it means to be Celtic. I've been to Bella Bella every summer since then. I feel most like myself and my happiest at home, whether I'm in Kitimat or Bella Bella. I've never been to Haida Gwaii, but I plan on going there soon, and I know that I'll love it there and that it'll feel like home. Some of my favorite things to do on the res are going to family dinners, going to potlatches, jumping off the dock, going swimming with all my cousins, playing basketball at the outdoor court. Some of my earlier memories of the res were playing manhunt with like 20 other kids until dark. My absolute favorite thing about the res is that everyone knows everyone. No matter what building you go to or what store you go to, one of your relatives or close friends are working there. go to the grocery store and you're there for an hour because you end up talking to your auntie. The population of Bella Bella is only 1,500, and if you're not related to someone, then you're definitely close with them or friends with them. Some people don't view the res the way I do, and I can understand that. Sometimes the res is a sad and depressing place. The res is home to me, and I try to see it as a good place where my people have been living for thousands of years. The reason the res isn't seen as a beautiful place is because of unhealed trauma that Indigenous people went through and are still going through. I'm grateful that we moved to Vancouver from Surrey. I hated living in Surrey. I love the res more and more every time I go, and it gets harder and harder every time I leave. The trip back from the res to Vancouver is always sad for me, and I hate how I feel for the first couple of days. I feel like I'm not in the right place. People tell me you're so lucky to live in the city, and you must get so many opportunities, which isn't necessarily true. People also say you need to leave the res to succeed in life, but I don't agree with that. I think knowing your culture, songs, and being able to speak your language is richer than getting a PhD. Place to me means the strong ties I have to my ancestral lands and knowing that they will always pull me back to where I'm supposed to be.
Hi, my name is Yengarli Indirdi and it means she knows the stories. My English name is Tamara Hall, and I am a part of the 2022 Native Youth Program. On my father's side, I am Coast Salish from Musqueam, and on my mother's side, I am Mohawk, Ojibwe, and Cayuga. Today, I'm going to be talking about my growth and how I learned to find peace within myself. Ever since I was little, it's been easy for me to understand. Understand what, you may ask? Well, that's the thing. Growing up, I've always had to learn to understand. I was 7 years old when my parents separated. Soon after, I joined my mom, and we moved across the city to the east side of Vancouver. I never really noticed how impactful this would be in my life until now. When we moved, I moved away from my community in Musqueam. Although I was able to visit lots, I still had this sense of loss in my life, and I never knew what it was. When I moved, I started attending an Indigenous-focused school on the east side of Vancouver. There at the school, I felt like I belonged. I felt safe in this new world. My mom worked a lot and was going to school at the same time, so I spent a lot of time away from her. I had a stepdad during this time too, who I got really close with. My time spent going back and forth from my home on the east side and my home in Musqueam was a lot for a young kid. When I was with my dad, I missed my mom. When I was with my mom, I missed my dad. This seems very unfair for a young kid, but remember, I just had to understand. Fast forward, being 10 years old and finding out my dad got cancer. Oh, and it was stage 4, so not so good for a 10-year-old. My mom decided we needed to move back to my community so that I could spend more time with my dad. When I moved back, I felt so safe again. My mom lived with my sister, and I lived at my dad's, switching between the both again. I got really close with him during this time. This is when reality hit me. All the hospital visits, all the emergency rooms, the chemo appointments. I was witnessing my dad die more and more every day. On the other hand, my stepdad and my mom ended things, so he left. And it was just me and my mom again. I started going to school on the west side of Vancouver, which was dramatically different from my old school. Here, the environment was different. I felt more colonialized in this world. I had to worry about how I dressed, how I talked, how I was perceived by others. My self-esteem plummeted. I got bullied for years for the way I looked, the way my body looked. Living in a world with colonialized beauty standards sucked. It sucked. I hated feeling the way I did. But remember, I just had to understand. Then, boom. February 25th, 2019, my dad passed away. As a 12-year-old that just lost her dad, I guess you can say that there was a lot of undealt trauma there. As the years passed, I lost myself. I tried so hard to change myself because I hated myself. I hated how young I was and how I didn't understand or I didn't or couldn't help my dad. Why I felt so different living in a world that was trying to assimilate me. I started self-harming when I was in sixth grade, which is crazy to look back at because I was only 11 or 12 then. As time went on, I went into high school. I fell into a place that I didn't really understand. I continued to be bullied throughout the first 2 years of high school. My mental place was all over. I didn't know what was wrong. I invalidated my feelings for so long, always telling myself I shouldn't feel this way. I'm lucky for the life I have. I invalidated the nights after nights of not wanting to be alive, telling myself I was dramatic. I didn't know what was wrong. I didn't know how to help myself. I felt so lost within myself. In the media, when your heart hurts, you need to go to therapy. You need to pay money to go to talk to somebody, talk to them about how you feel, how to deal with things, how to cope with things. I've been in therapy since I was a little kid. A really little kid. Although it helps, there are still parts of me that feel strange. Like something was missing, something wasn't clicking, and nothing really seemed to help. Indigenous people for a long time have been taught to just deal with things, to move on. Told that it was years and years ago and it shouldn't affect you anymore. But that's not true. Intergenerational trauma still resides within Indigenous people today. My dad went to residential school. And to this day, me and others are still dealing with the effects of that. The mental and physical toll that it takes on me every day. I hate that I just had to understand, just to understand everything, no matter how painful it was for me. Most of the time, it wasn't even my own pain that I was feeling, but the pain that every Indigenous person feels in their heart after the years and years of attempted assimilation and attempted genocide. My mom raised me to break the cycles, the unhealthy cycles that run through my blood, the cycles that the colonializers brought here to my people. My mom is my hero. I am so thankful for her. She has given me a clear example of matriarchal strength. Growing up, she let me experience things on my own, but supported me when I needed it. She was the first person to tell me that my culture heals me. I never really understood that. What does that mean? My culture heals me? And that's what I wanted to talk to you guys about today. The things I have learned and the things I have experienced have forever changed my outlook on my life. My culture heals me. My people heal me. I feel at peace when I'm out on the canoe embracing the power of the water or when I'm helping cook for the longhouse for my people. I feel at peace when I'm fishing or crabbing with my brother Gord. I feel at peace when I'm eating fry bread and peanut butter at the table with my mom. I feel at peace when I'm with my community in ceremonies. I feel at peace at powwows. I feel at peace when I'm hearing my language being spoken. I feel most at peace with my family. My aunties, my uncles, my nieces, my nephews. Especially my siblings. My sister Kim, my brother Tyson, my brother Ronnie, my sister Christina, my sister Shannon, my brother Leonard. And most importantly, my mom. They heal me more than I could ever ask for. My culture and my people have shown me my worth in this world. They show me how to feel at peace with myself. They show me why I should love and embrace myself. Why I need to continue to break the cycles for the generations that come after me. I felt so lost for a long time, not knowing who I am. Or what my purpose is. Place to me is feeling at peace with yourself and with your environment. I, Tamara Hall, am a strong, resilient, beautiful Indigenous woman, and I finally love myself.
Kier Yeoman Stevens Diwayu, Ganhada Dehu, Simshan Nuyu, Gitsalu Diwawaku. My name is Kier Yeoman Stevens. I'm Ganhada Raven and Simshan Gitsalu Kitsalas. I just introduced myself in Somalia, something I thought I'd never be able to do after moving to Vancouver. I'm 18 years old and just graduated out of Britannia Secondary. And I was this year's Vancouver School Board's Grade 12 Achievement of Celebration Ceremony Valedictorian, or Indigenous Grade 12 Grad Valedictorian. This year's senior alumni of the 2022 Summer NYP Program. For those who don't know what that means, I am the only one who has graduated out of the cohort, and I was here last year. And for all those who heard last year's podcast, I'm finally pursuing my dreams in becoming a pediatric nurse and attending school in the fall of 2022.
I was asked to plan what I was going to say for my story, and every sentence I wrote made me realize I hated the way I was writing. But I always had a way of writing poems. So instead of hearing a straight-up story like the rest of the audio documentary, you'll be listening to a poem I wrote called People is the Only Place I've Known. People is the only place I've known. I was asked what a place means to me. First, I thought of a place that's secured with a lock and key. I couldn't for the life of me think of a singular place. I thought it'd be easy, but that wasn't the case. Like, think right now, what is a place you would have thought about? If it was an instant, go on, spit it out. Is it an actual place, or did your thoughts get misplaced? Okay, maybe you thought about one, but this was hard for me. Why? Because unlike the sky, places change a lot. Renovations are required in every little spot, every couple of years to stay cool and hip. Well, not really, if I must admit. Or even to make sure the building doesn't crumble if an earthquake hit. Even then, renovations may take up a couple of years, as I've learned from MOA and the Great Hall. It's okay though, because now the building will stand nice and tall. But I know for sure that when renovations are done, the place will be unrecognizable after renos have begun. Like, that isn't the same place you recall. And it looks so different all in all. Like, it isn't the same person you think about, the person you couldn't go without. They change for the better, or... no. Growing up, I was told if I have nothing nice to say, to just not say anything, so I'll leave it at that for now. They could help you grow as a whole. Now, you are in control. Or so you thought. The person you once knew a lot changed. Like, the personality was exchanged. The person you once knew and adored now left you ignored. They get up and leave without saying a simple goodbye just for you to wonder why. People come and go. That's something you can't control. When they do come into your being, it's like a new way of seeing. Having them in your life makes you all cheery. They make you a better person in theory. But don't you forget. Don't you get too attached yet. Buildings go up and come down all around town. Buildings are just four walls. It's the people who make the calls. Whether we like it or not, we have people who care about us a lot. So, back to the question. I finally have a suggestion. Place to me doesn't consist of a ceiling and four walls, but the people who stand within the halls. Life isn't all that easy, but the jokes we tell now are way too cheesy. As soon as I cross that stage, I realize that time flies so fast. So make sure the memories last. We all have our highs and our lows, then we achieve our goals. But people are people. Some are nice, some are a little evil, but the true ones will be there through thick and thin, and their hearts will be pure from within. Place to me means home. People is the only place I've known. Home isn't a physical place, but people in this case. So that's my response, that places change a lot. So I chose the ones who I care for. And like I said before, people come and go, and that's something you can't control. So embrace the people you have around. Here's now. Worry about the future after. Go see your people and fill a room with laughter.
This audio documentary was created in collaboration with CITR 101.9 FM. It is produced by Hannah Imam in assistance with MK McToto and Ruby Raven. Special thanks to Jasper Sloan Yip.
The song Fluctuate is by me, Haley Stogan, and the music is by Aria Viveros. Thank you so much for listening.
As hard as I try, just never seems to work out. This feeling is a lie. I have these little moments though, where my serotonin's high. Tears dry, and I feel loved. My emotions tend to fluctuate. Doesn't know when to heal or when to break. I feel loved.